masks have been distributed among the people as one of the precautions against the probable poison gas attack by Iraq. At the conclusion of the World Summit for Children in New York, 71 heads of state and government have undertaken to increase aid for suffering children, in particular in developing countries. They signed a 10-point program which provides for national and international aid measures, including an improvement in prenatal care, a reduction in infant mortality, and the promotion of family planning. Hunger and illiteracy are to be combated, and children are to be protected from war. One day before German unification, Germany was given back its full sovereignty by the four victorious powers of the Second World War. In New York, the four ministers of the Soviet Union, the United States, France, and Britain signed a so-called suspension declaration, which enables the United Germany to decide freely on its own matters as from Tuesday midnight. The declaration is an important prerequisite for the future withdrawal of foreign troops from German soil. The United Nations should play a stronger role in future in shaping a new cooperative world order. Speaking at the 45th UN General Assembly in New York on Monday, US President George Bush said the United Nations had turned out to be a suitable forum for dealing with serious conflicts. Latest activities of the UN Security Council aimed at ending the Gulf crisis gave evidence of this, the US President said. At the end of the Cold War, the organization could play a more important role in East-West relations. The chairman of the Jewish communities in Germany have expressed a lack of understanding for the West German government's decision to close the country's borders to Soviet Jews. They said that in view of Germany's past, the right of such refugees to settle in Germany ought to be a matter of course in all German states. This news comes to you from Radio Berlin International. By signing a law on changing the constitution, President Wojciech Jaruzelski today paved the way for the forthcoming presidential elections in Poland, which will probably be held on the 25th of November. Jaruzelski, who was elected president in July last year, with a majority of only one vote by the country's National Assembly, will then transfer his office to his successor. Trade union leader Lech Walenza, meanwhile, officially announced to stand candidacy for president. Prime Minister Tadeusz Mazowiecki has said he will be taking his final decision this week. The Soviet Home Minister Eduard Shevardnadze and the South Korean Foreign Minister Cho Ho-young, meeting at United Nations headquarters in New York, have agreed upon the establishment of diplomatic relations between the two countries. They expressed the hope that this step would contribute to a peaceful settlement on the Korean Peninsula and thus to stability. China has offered Taiwan speedy reunification. At a reception in Peking to mark China's National Day, Premier Li Peng suggested lifting postal trade and travel restriction and opening unification negotiations. He said he hoped that in the interests of the people on both sides, the Taiwan government would show reason. The ANC Deputy President Nelson Mandela is due to begin a tour abroad on the 8th of October, the fifth since his release from prison 8 months ago. Following a meeting with French President François Mitterrand in Paris, Mr. Mandela will be visiting the Soviet Union, India, Malaysia, Brunei, Australia, Indonesia and Japan. The Nigerian Minister for Development and Cooperation, Hans-Wilhelm Ebeling, has announced that the Bonn Ministry for Economic Cooperation will continue nearly all GDR aid projects in developing countries following the unification of the two German states. Projects to be continued include the Carlos Marx Hospital in the Nicaraguan capital, Managua. And finally in the news, West German Chancellor Helmut Kohl has said the Christian Democratic Union Party is the party of German and European unity. Speaking at the merger congress of the Christian Democratic Union parties and the two parts of Germany, which began in Hamburg on Tuesday, the Chancellor spoke about three great political tasks for the last decade of this century. The CDU wanted to make the new German states on what is now the territory of the DDR to become blossoming landscapes. His party was striving for European unity and against any form of national egoism. That means that Germany, as one of the world's most potent economic powers, should serve the whole world. Germany would help to prevent threats against world peace, Chancellor Kohl said. Syria Prime Minister Lothar de Maizière tried to get the delegates' understanding for the East Syrians passed as a coalition party of the SED, a former Socialist Unity Party. His party was divided into a corrupt leadership and a less effective basis, he said. Since autumn last year, many young people joined the Christian Democratic Party in the East. This was a great challenge, Lothar de Maizière said. During a festive ceremony on Tuesday afternoon, the two parties had merged to become a United Christian Democratic Party of Germany. To end the news, here again are the main points. The United States doesn't exclude military operations against Iraq under UN auspices. At the conclusion of the World Summit for Children in New York, 71 heads of state and government have undertaken to increase aid for suffering children, in particular in developing countries. One day before unification, Germany was given back its full sovereignty by the four victorious powers of the Second World War. And that ends the news.
That newscast came to you from Radio Berlin International, the voice of the disappearing German Democratic Republic. Welcome to the last but one RBI program. This is Gitte Siebert at the microphone for you, guiding you through our Monday show from East Berlin. For the day of German unification ahead, most of the items in today's program will certainly concentrate on questions closely related to the big event. So, what do we have in store? First of all, there will be our regular items of commentary and press review. Then we'll be having our Monday look at weekend events in the world of sports, compiled and presented by sportsmed Bob Hamilton. And as all the fans and friends of DXing among you certainly know, it will also be time for the Extra, the very last edition here on Radio Berlin International. But why not stay tuned for the next 40 or so minutes? Of now with commentary. On the 3rd of October, the two German states become united. What was the role of the Soviet Union in the unification process? How does it look upon the united and powerful Germany? Here is Ursula Rieger to present today's commentary, which was written by Hardy Graubner.
It's just over 2 weeks ago that the foreign ministers of the four victorious Allied powers of World War II and the representatives of the two German states meeting in Moscow drew the final line under the 2+4 talks. The treaty on the external aspects of German unification, accomplished on October the 3rd, was signed without any pomp or circumstance. There was not even a seemingly obligatory applause at that moment, at which Germany was given de facto its full sovereignty. The press photographers found it difficult to get pictures of the Soviet president. But it was he, after all, who with his policy of perestroika about 5 years ago started the ball rolling, and not only in Europe, but throughout the world. Especially the democratic change in Eastern Europe, including that in the GDR, would have been unthinkable without Mikhail Gorbachev's new thinking. Foresighted as he is, the Soviet politician could not, however, anticipate developments as they have taken place in 1990. He knew very well that overcoming the split of Germany would, in the final analysis, be illusory without a united Germany. Giving up the DDR as a military alliance within the Warsaw Treaty must have been especially hard for the Soviet side. The only consolation is the certainty that the East-West conflict, as a conflict between social systems of potential enemies, had a war been unleashed, has been overcome. The new Germany is under the obligation, especially towards the Soviet Union, to reduce its armed forces to 370,000 men, to renounce atomic, biological and chemical weapons once and for all, and to accept the borders of Europe laid down under the terms of international law. Considering all the difficulties which are threatening the very existence of the Soviet Union at present, it is quite understandable that that country wants to have a share in the gigantic changes of the present time. Germany seems to be a suitable partner for this. While the United States is no doubt facing an economic recession and most of the Western European countries are concentrating more or less on the preparations for the envisaged European single market, the strong German currency could considerably promote the necessary recovery of the Soviet economy. The basic treaty with the Soviet Union, initialed just recently, provides a basis for long-term German assistance. This document lays down the framework of future contacts between the two countries, reaching far into the next century. Contacts which the Soviet Union has in no such way with any other Western country. A first step is marked by an initial 12,000 million marks, which Bonn has promised, above all for Soviet house building, the withdrawal of Soviet troops from Germany, and the retraining of these troops. A quarter of this sum is given in the form of an interest-free credit, in order to help ailing branches of the Soviet industry to recover. May this money, as well as the further envisaged cooperation between the Germans and the Soviet Union, help to ensure that Gorbachev's perestroika will at long last have an effect in his own country, if it's not too late for this already. While the losers of the Second World War will be euphoric about unity on October the 3rd, politicians in Moscow will rack their brains as to how the collapse of the formerly victorious power can still be prevented. Commentary here on the English service of Radio Berlin International. As we learn from many of our listeners' letters, our daily look at the German press features prominently on their list of favorite programs. Needless to say that the credit goes to one of our most hard-working press reviewers, Wolfram Bierenstein, who has joined me in the studio now with a pile of newspapers. So, Wolfram, please tell us the latest.
October is German month, with the two Germanys uniting on Wednesday after more than 40 years of separate development. It's small wonder, then, that inner German subjects take precedent in press comment these days. The decision taken by the Constitutional Court in Karlsruhe to annul the election law for the first all-German elections on the 2nd of December is welcomed by newspapers in East and West Germany. The law, which had been passed by the two parliaments, prescribed a minimum of 5% of the votes to enable political parties to enter the new Bundestag. The Christian Democrat-inclined East Berlin Daily Neue Zeit writes, "The court's intervention was not so much prompted by legal considerations, but rather by a healthy sense of fairness. The jurors responded to a claim filed by the smaller political groupings, which was placed at a disadvantage by the 5% hurdle. Particularly those activists of the civic rights movement, who had brought about the political change in the GDR last year, will now get their fair chance at the December elections." A quote from Neue Zeit in East Berlin. The liberal paper Der Morgen, also published in East Berlin, deals with the spreading hatred of foreigners in East Germany and comments, "These Germans are obviously not well prepared to cope with the increasing number of immigrants who look and live differently. For decades, international friendship was ordered from above, an empty phrase which only covered the lack of opportunity to learn more from other nations through personal contact. To protect foreigners against any assaults is very urgent. More urgent, however, is to harmonize relations between people, irrespective of their social and ethnic backgrounds. The East Germans have opted for open borders. Now they have to behave accordingly. An opinion expressed by the liberal paper Der Morgen. Preoccupied as they are with domestic problems, the commentators tend to neglect their progress made in European disarmament. A laudable exception is the popular Berliner Zeitung, which hopes for a substantial reduction of conventional forces very soon. The paper observes, the breakthrough was made by foreign ministers Shevardnadze and Baker at the fringes of the UN Assembly. Even if there are still a number of open questions left, at long last there is light at the end of the tunnel. After 17 years of haggling in Vienna and other places, common sense has won the upper hand at long last. There's every hope now that a draft treaty on disarmament will be ready for the Paris CSCE summit in November. And on that optimistic note, we conclude today's RBI press review.
And in case you've only just joined us, let me remind you that you're tuned to Radio Berlin International, the voice of the still existing German Democratic Republic. But before we continue with our next item, let's sit back and listen to some music. I wonder what Mixmaster Steve has chosen for us. Is the time for a look at weekend events in the world of sports. I guess Bob Hamilton will tell you about Sunday's Berlin Marathon, the first one to be held in both parts of the city, by the way. And there is also the Grand Prix tennis tournament in Leipzig. But here is Bob to tell you all about it.
Saturday was a bleak day for East German football. The match between Sachsen Leipzig, second in the 14-team first division, and bottom club Karl-Zeiss Jena, had to be abandoned after 83 minutes, with Jena 1-0 in the lead. The reason? Large numbers of the home fans, incensed by a number of decisions made by the DDR's World Cup referee in Italy, Siegfried Kirschen, hurled stones, beer cans, and whatever else they could lay their hands on, onto the pitch, and then finally invaded it. Safety precautions at the ground were described varyingly as catastrophic and non-existent. Police had to move in at the end of the game between Frankfurt Oder and Dynamo Dresden as well to sort out the troublemakers. Dresden won this encounter 2-1. Also winning away from home were the league leaders Hansa Rostock. In the match of the day against one of the teams much fancied pre-season as favourites for the title, Chemnitz, formerly Karl-Reichstadt, they emerged as clear-cut 2-0 winners. Rostock now have 10 points in their 6 games, while Sachsen Leipzig, Rot-Weiß Erfurt, who were 3-1 home winners over Energie Cottbus, and Dynamo Dresden all have 7 points apiece. In the other matches on Saturday, Stahl Brandenburg beat Stahl Eisenhüttenstadt 2-1 at home. Lokomotive Leipzig lost 1-0 away to Berlin FC, formerly Dynamo Berlin, in front of just 750 spectators, while Chemie Halle scored a 2-0 home victory over Magdeburg, last season's vice-champions. Attracting huge crowds of spectators, by contrast, they were reckoned at around 1 million along the route, was the Berlin Marathon. It attracted around 25,000 runners from some 60 countries and was held for the first time in both parts of the former divided city. Setting up a new fastest performance for the season was the 28-year-old Australian Steve Monaghetti, whose winning time was 2 hours, 8 minutes and 16 seconds. Monaghetti was followed home by Gedemis Shahanga of Tanzania and two GDR runners, Jörg Peter and Stefan Freigang. Coming home first in the women's race was Uta Pittich, who earlier this year moved from east to west. Her winning time was 2 hours, 28 minutes, 48 seconds. Second was Kokowska of Poland and third Birskens of the Netherlands. The race was overshadowed by the death of a 60-year-old English runner, John Geren. He collapsed shortly after the start of the race, and all attempts to save his life proved in vain. The suspected cause of death was heart failure. Making for positive headlines in the second city of Leipzig, in contrast to the football hooliganism at Sachsen Leipzig's ground, was the Grand Prix tennis tournament in Hall 7 at the trade fair grounds on the outskirts of the town. This was the first ever tournament of its kind to be held in the eastern part of Germany, and it was dominated by one woman, Steffi Graf. While the crowds in the hall were sparse throughout the week, there was not a seat left empty for the final between Steffi Graf and Arantxa Sanchez of Spain. Well nigh 8,000 spectators were behind Steffi all the way in her crisp and smooth 6-1, 6-1 victory, and they gave her a standing ovation when it was all over. Steffi was deeply moved by the response and donated her prize money of 44,000 marks to help promote tennis in East Germany, which has had virtually no support in the past. And that's it, I'm afraid, from this very last edition of Spotlight on Sport here on Radio Berlin International.
Bob Hamilton with a look at weekend sports events here on Radio Berlin International. I'm sure all the fans and friends of the world of DXing are already waiting for our DXer program. And as our time is limited, let me quickly hand over to Angelika Schulz and Hardy Graupner.
New and far.
This is
Angelika
and Harvey.
Welcome you to the last edition of The Extra.
Here in Radio Berlin International's European and North American service.
In which we'll be giving you the correct answers to the 4 rounds of our The Extra summer quiz.
In addition to the quiz results, and an explanation of the answers, we'll also be quoting from letters and reports which are still coming in.
Many of the last letters have been quoted in Thank You for Writing or in the Mailbag program already, but we're still receiving correspondence from regular listeners of long-standing and RBI DX Club members and from those listeners who started tuning in last autumn to follow events here and who got hooked on our program since then.
And there are still some first-time writers sending in their reports. So after the quiz results, you can hear some of the quotes.
Here now is the correct answer to the first question. We ask, in which layer does meteorite scattering take place? A, in the F2 layer, B, in the F1 layer, or C, in the E layer?
Nearly all the entries are correct. The correct answer was C, the E layer. The vast majority of meteorites flare up in the E region, although there's some burning down in the F1 layer.
The second question in July was, what are the particles in the ionosphere that bend back, refract radio waves for RDX reception back to the Earth? A, ions of atmospheric gas molecules and atoms, B, electrons, or C, solar protons?
This must have been a difficult question, as most of the answers were wrong. Here now is the correct answer. B, electron.
The mass of the electron is about 2,000 times smaller than that of a proton. That's why radio waves cause the oscillation of the free electrons far more easily than that of ions. In this process, the free electrons become transmitters, sending back to Earth the radio waves that stimulate them.
On that, question number three. We asked, what is the most common type of long-wave transmitting antenna? A, quarter-wave vertical, B, horizontal inverted L or T antenna, or C, stacked dipoles?
The correct answer is, in fact, B, horizontal L or T antenna type. Stacked dipoles would lead to an array nobody would be able to materialize apart from financing the array.
And now for the fourth and last question. We wanted to know, is a converter, which on principle is a set of a mixing and an oscillator stage, a device to A, improve the receiver's sensitivity, B, add a new frequency range to the receiver, or C, decrease the receiver's susceptibility to cross-modulations?
In fact, a converter adds a new frequency range to the receiver, enhancing its scope so that the shortwave receiver will be able to receive VHF and even UHF.
Actually, that was a trick question because, in addition, a converter can help also to reduce the receiver's susceptibility to cross-modulation. So the answer is far more B and less C.
But this question can't have been too difficult because nearly all the entries were correct. Well done.
I'm sure you've all kept notes of your entries. So if you've answered all four questions, the pattern should have been C, B, B, B.
And now it's over to some quotes from letters we received in the past few days. The first comes from Mike Stiles of Birmingham in England, whose name may be familiar to you, as he's been quoted many times in our programs with his many comments and interesting questions. Here's what Mike wrote.
There's much sadness in my heart as I write my very last letter to you. I began listening to RBI way back in 1984. And I never thought that one day I'd be writing about or commenting on the demise and eventual closure of your fine radio station. I shall miss your interesting programs and friendly announcers very, very much. RBI is to be swept away, along with many other things which one associates with the DDR. Everything will disappear, even your well-established and extremely popular DX Club. No more beautiful QSL cards, no more valuable DX tips and information, no more enjoyable and interesting DX Club summer quizzes. It's like a bombshell for all enthusiastic DX Club members like myself.
And Mike continues in his letter, I've gleaned so much information about technical matters from your DX programs, enabling me to participate in your summer quizzes. Thanks to those excellent programs, I'm now quite knowledgeable about many aspects of the wonderful world of shortwave radio. I hope I won't forget what I've learned about the ionosphere, meteorite scattering, sideband splash, propagation, etc., with the disappearance of this most informative slot for the DXers.
Now we could go on quoting from your moving letter, Mike, but we'd like to include some more listeners in this last DXer program. By the way, many of the technical problems raised by our listeners were a bit beyond us, as you can imagine. But we always had a great help in Wolf Hess, Yankee 31 November Oscar, our DX editor, so that we were able to cope with some tricky questions too.
And here now is a quote from one of the few YLs and XYLs, and she is Caroline Ford of Brakesville, Humberside in England. She wrote, I've been an occasional listener to RBI for several years, and a regular listener since the changes got underway in your country. Your 1545 or 1745 broadcasts have become a way of life for me over recent months, and I will miss you very much when you are no longer there. I would regard RBI as the friendliest and definitely one of the most well-balanced radio stations on the air. I can appreciate that it has been often difficult for you over the last year to keep us informed about the rapidly changing and complicated situation in your country. But I think you've done a really excellent job. Your broadcasts have not only been informative, but also entertaining, thought-provoking and sincere. I've especially enjoyed your commentaries and the Wednesday feature viewpoint for these qualities. It must be a very worrying time for all the staff of RBI, as it seems that the vast majority of you will soon be out of work. Having been made redundant myself last year, I can sympathize with you and understand how you must be feeling.
Thank you for those kind remarks, Caroline. Many listeners have written in a similar way, and it was very difficult to select the quotes.
And here's another one from John Downing of Ballydigley in Ireland, who's been a listener of long standing. He wrote,
I first heard RBI more than 25 years ago. I've got a number of QSOs from your country and some literature going back more than 25 years. I still have it. It will be strange not to hear RBI. I would like to see an overseas station with some English broadcasts dealing specifically with the situation in what will soon be the former German Democratic Republic. From Ireland, it's goodbye, and I look forward to receiving your QSL card and any other literature you might wish to send me. I would like to have some mementos of your station.
And Charles Tirito of Bridgewater in New Jersey in the United States has a similar request. He wrote, I have been an RBI listener for over 30 years, and I'm saddened at the prospect that RBI may soon end its broadcasts with reunification. I hope that you send me as many different QSL cards as possible so that I have many remembrances of RBI.
Well, we'll see what we can do for you, and this goes, of course, for everybody else who send us their research reports.
And the final quote is from a letter we received from RBI DX Club member Bill Courage of Ontario, New York, in the United States. He sent his letter and 16 reports by DHL Worldwide Express to make sure it reaches us while we're still on the air. And it arrived after just 2 days. Here are some excerpts from Bill's letter.
It is with tremendous sadness that I send this note to you. Over the last several months that I've been avidly listening to the shortwave radio again, I have truly enjoyed every broadcast that you have aired. I looked forward to hearing your signature tune each evening, knowing your broadcast would soon follow. I always found your broadcasts warm, friendly, informative, well-prepared, well-delivered, and a pleasure to listen to. You always took the time to answer your listeners' questions honestly and straightforward. Your news was timely and objective. Your musical selections were light, lively, entertaining, and enjoyable. Your commentaries were thought-provoking and interesting. I also enjoyed your press reviews. With so much happening in Germany and the rest of the world of late, it is very important to hear how people around the world view these events. You put a lot of information and entertainment into your 45-minute program.
And Bill continued in his letter, even though RBI is a major international broadcaster, your announcers have always maintained a warm and personal touch with your listeners. RBI seemed like a hometown station, which I enjoyed. Certainly, without any doubt, the RBI DX Club is unique in all the world. This was my favorite feature of your station. From this program, I learned more about shortwave listening than from any other source. Other broadcasters may try, but your club will never be duplicated.
What can we say in view of all this praise? It's good to know that our programs have been appreciated so much, so that all the effort we put in has been worthwhile. And one final remark to Bill Courage, your first and last diploma, the H50 RBI, has been awarded to you and is in the post for you.
So all we can say now to all of you wishing us well in your last letters and even in New Year's cards is thank you for being faithful listeners and DX Club members and for contributing to the success of our DX program.
So we'll say goodbye with the typical DXS greetings.
Best DX.
55, much success.
72 peace.
73s from Hardy.
And 88s from Monica.
was it? Not only from the world of the Exing, but also from East Berlin for today. Sad but true, there is only one more RBI program to come, namely tomorrow, which will be the very last day of the Goddard GDR. So I pack my things and leave now, but not without saying thank you to all of your listeners of RBI who have kept faith with us for so long. And it's bye-bye from your program host, Kitty Sievert.
Thank you. Herzlich zum Magazin, am Mikrofon Boris Römer. Hier in Schlagzeilen unser Programmangebot. Abschied von der DDR. Gedanken vom Rektor der Humboldt-Universität zu Berlin, Professor Heinrich Fink. Dann ein Sportüberblick vom Wochenende. Im Mittelpunkt war das Tennis-Grand Prix-Turnier der Damen in Leipzig. Abschließend DX-Spezial. Welche Aussichten haben Hörfunk und Fernsehen in den zukünftigen ostdeutschen Bundesländern? Darum wird es gehen. Soweit diese Übersicht. Hier im Magazin geht es jetzt erst einmal weiter mit den Nachrichten.
Zu Beginn Schlagzeilen. Deutschen wurde volle Souveränität zurückgegeben. Christdemokraten beider deutscher Staaten vereinigt. USA schließen UNO-Militäraktionen gegen Irak nicht mehr aus. Die Meldungen im Einzelnen, New York. Noch rechtzeitig zum Tag der Einheit ist den Deutschen am Montag ihre volle Souveränität zurückgegeben worden. In New York unterzeichneten die Außenminister der USA, der Sowjetunion, Frankreichs und Großbritanniens eine sogenannte Suspendierungserklärung. Sie versetzt das Vereinigte Deutschland in die Lage, ab Dienstag Mitternacht zum ersten Mal nach dem Zweiten Weltkrieg wieder uneingeschränkt über sich selbst zu bestimmen. Die alliierten Vorbehaltsrechte hatten unter anderem den militärischen Status von Berlin.